Good morning, everyone.
Good
morning, members. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee meeting today. We are going to be reviewing the bill that was posted online last night, and we will review that in its entirety. We will be taking some time for public testimony. Right now, I only have two testifiers on the list. I don't anticipate large amounts of public testimony, but I do anticipate finishing this meeting by 12:30. So if there's a lot of public testifiers that plan on testifying, we will have to keep those remarks short. We're going to start today's, well, first we need to bring House File 3962. I move the House File 3692 for passage to Ways and Means. And we'll start out today with a walkthrough of the spreadsheet. Oh, I'm sorry. We have to amend. There's DE amendment for House File 3692. I move the DE. Any discussion on the DE? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. We now have the bill in the shape that I need it, and we will start with a review of the spreadsheet. Mr. Lee, will you please go through the spreadsheet line by line?
Mr. Chair and members, if you look in your packets, you'll find a legal size sheet that has the House or the 2016 Capital Budget House Capital Investment Committee title on it, and it's a list of projects. The first, and this is ordered in the bill order as well. The first agency is the University of Minnesota. There's two appropriations for the university, $38 million for HEPR and $27.167 million for the Chemical Sciences Building in Duluth. Under the Minnesota State Colleges and University Systems, there is $35.5 million for HEPR, $978,000 for Minnesota State CTC in Fergus Falls, $820,000 for Minnesota State CTC in Wadena, $826,000 for Northland CTC in East Grand Forks, $7,427,000 for Riverland Community College in Albert Lee, $6.8 million for South Central College in North Mankato, $18.572 million for St. Cloud State University. And I should note that the all of the items that say GO slash user financing are funded one-third with general obligation, or they're all general obligation debt, but one-third of the debt service is paid for by state general fund debt service. Or sorry, excuse me, two-thirds is from the state general fund and one-third is from the university system.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lowy.
Mr. Chair, is there a, I'm looking through my stuff, is there a form that shows what the asks were, what the request number was, or, you know, so we can kind of do a comparative of how close we are to what they're, so like HEPR, for example, what the ask was for HEPR, and do we have a form? I can't find it. I think we've had that in the past.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. We do not have that information in our packets today. We can certainly get that information for you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that'd be helpful because I think in years past we've had that kind of where you can kind of, you know, just to kind of compare how close we are. Because, I mean, these all might sound good or they might even be higher than the asks. I don't know. But it'd be nice to know.
Okay. Just a second, Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly, if you have questions about what was requested, you'll have to go through Mr. Lee. We do not have that information readily available. I apologize for that. It was not my intention to hide anything. As you know, it's my first go-around with capital investments, so I was not aware of the past practice. But we can make that information available to you. I just can't get it before you immediately.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lee, before you continue, I would also note that I believe you have put everything in alphabetical order, so it's not, even on this spreadsheet, it's not in the order of priority from the various agencies, it's in alphabetical order.
Continuing on then, Mr. Chair, to education, there's two appropriations. One is for library construction grants at $2 million, and the other is a grant to a political subdivision, the Red Lake Independent School District, for facilities for $14,070,000. I should note, just as you're reading these spreadsheets, in most cases I list the grants to political subdivisions, the project name, going from left to right, and the grant to the agency from left to right. You can see in education. And moving on to the Minnesota State Academies, two appropriations, $2 million for asset preservation and $50,000 for the security corridor design. Moving on to page two, Department of Natural Resources, $12 million for asset preservation and a total of $3.5 million for flood hazard mitigation with three specified projects. One is $950,000 for the flood hazard mitigation general program administered by the DNR, and then $750,000 for Browns Valley and $1.8 million for Ortonville. Under dam repair, reconstruction and removal, $9 million total, $500,000 of which is for emergency repairs on state-owned dams, $3.6 million for the Waynesboro Dam, $2.5 million for the Lake Bronson Dam, $500,000 for the Pelican Rapids Dam, $200,000 for the Norway Lake Dam, $200,000 for the Yellow Medicine County Impoundment Dam, and $100,000 for the St. Louis County Littlestone Lake Dam. And then a total of $1.4 million for other state-owned dams. Under state trail development, a total of $6.19 million, $2.59 of that for the Glacial Lakes Trail, and $3.6 million for the Cayuna State Recreation Area. And then grant to the City of Champlin for the Mill Pond Dam at $3.3 million. Under the Pollution Control Agency, $12.705 million for the St. Louis River Area of Concern, and $7.8 million for the Lake Redwood Reclamation Project. And I should just note on the title here, it's not actually a grant to the City of Redwood Falls, but a grant to the Watershed District in that area. The joint powers. And then under the Board of Water and Soil Resources, two appropriations, one for $6 million for the Reinvest in Minnesota for RIM, and $1 million for the Local Government Roads Wetland Replacement Program. Moving on to page three, is actually the Rural Finance Authority, not necessarily Department of Agriculture, $35 million for user financing for the Rural Finance Authority loans. Moving on to the Minnesota Zoo, $4 million for asset preservation. In administration, $7 million for the Centennial Parking Ramp and Structure Repairs, $2.5 million for statewide CAPRA, and $350,000 for the Capitol Complex Memorials and Repairs. Under MINUT, Repurposing State Office Data Center, $1.432 million. For military affairs, $2.5 million for asset preservation. And for the Department of Public Safety, the Camp Ripley Oil Train Derailment Training Center, $3.521 million. Moving on to page four, under the Department of Transportation, the local road and bridge program grants. First is local bridge, just the general program with no set-asides, $90 million. And then under the Local Road Improvement Fund, this is a total of both the program and specific set-asides in rider language. So for just the general program, there's $90 million, and I should note one thing that isn't on the spreadsheet is a rider language for Cypress Drive in Baxter, but there isn't a dollar amount specified. In projects where there are dollar amounts specified, there's $1 million for Appleton Township, $25 million for Hennepin County relating to the 35W Lake Street Access Project, $20.5 million for Ramsey County for the local road portion of Interstate 694 and Rice Street, and $700,000 for the Redwood County State Veterans Cemetery. And I should note that this is, in fact, a road that would be paved leading to the cemetery. A total of $26.749 million for the rail grade separation on crude oil rail program. This is two projects, one in Anoka County for $11,987,000, and one in the city of Red Wing at Sturgeon Lake Road for $14,762,000. Next is the rail highway rail grade crossing warning replacement system at $1 million, and the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority for $4 million. Moving on, there are specific trunk highway bonds authorized, and the first is U.S. Highway 12 in Hennepin County at $15 million, then U.S. Highway 212 in Chaska at $8 million, and then a project on 35W in Lake Drive for $13 million, and Interstate 94 and Brockton Lane, also in Hennepin County, for $34 million, and these are all trunk highway bonds. There's one item that is trunk highway cash spending at $833,000, and that's for U.S. Highway 61 in Red Wing. Finally, the last project under MnDOT is the Port Development Assistance Program at $5 million. And I will note, you'll see in the totals, there are two different totals for GEO. The general obligation includes the port and rail projects, but there's a separate category for general obligation transportation fund, and essentially the transportation fund is GEO debt, is general obligation debt and is general fund, but it has a separate designation when it's local road and bridge. And moving on to the Metropolitan Council, $12.1 million for the Transitway Capital Improvement Program. This builds out the Orange Line. $2.5 million for the Inflow and Infiltration Grant Program. And $8.75 million for the Mall of America Transit Station. Moving on to page 5, Department of Human Services, $57.611 million for Phase 2 of the Minnesota Security Hospital, $7.53 million for the Child and Adolescent Behavioral Services, commonly known as CABS, $2.25 million for the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, and then a grant to Hennepin County for the Regional Medical Examiner's Facility at $2,680,000. Under the Veterans Affairs Department, $4 million for asset preservation. Moving on to corrections, $8 million for asset preservation, $19 million for the St. Cloud Intake Facility, Phase 2, and $1.9 million for the Moose Lake Master Control renovation. Under the Department of Economic Development, $6 million for the Transportation Economic Development Program, $10 million for the Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, and $2 million for the Innovative Business Development Infrastructure Program. $21 million for Duluth Sperry Street Hot Water Conversion Project. $3 million for the City of Litchfield, the Phase 2 Power Generation. $98,000 for Medelia Public Infrastructure. And $3.443 million for the City of St. James Highway 4 Allied Projects. And finally, City of St. Paul Science Museum at $13 million. Under the Public Facilities Authority, $17 million for matching funds for US EPA grants. And then I will note on line 192, the Water Infrastructure Fund, I have breakouts for wastewater and drinking water. In rider language in the bill on page 30 of the amendment, you'll see the specific call-outs of this $70 million. It has $51.5 million for wastewater and $18.5 million for drinking water. Moving then on to the Water Initiative, point source implementation grants at $46.5 million, and a grant to the City of East Grand Forks for the sewer interconnect with Grand Forks at $5.3 million, and then general fund cash spending for the Lewis and Clark Joint Powers Board for the pipeline project at $11.5 million. Moving on to the last page, the Historical Society at $2.5 million for asset preservation, and then under Minnesota Management and Budget, this is the bond sale expenses. $865,000 for general obligation bonds and $70,000 for trunk highway bonds. And you see the totals below. And I will make a note on line 229, the prior bond sale reduction and estimated debt service savings equivalent. This is language that was in the governor's bill that would lower debt service authorizations from bills dating back to the 1990s. The projects have been completed and there's no longer a project left, and this essentially reduces those, and they weren't canceled to date, I believe, because of problems with a accounting system. So enacting that in as itself would incur debt service savings equivalent to $12.571 million. And then in addition to that, there is $6 million in cancellations, mostly related to unencumbered funds that were going to be canceled by the end of the year by the Department of Natural Resources, PFA, and the Department of Public Safety relating to a 2012 disaster bond bill. Moving on to the sheet that just got handed out in your packet. This is the legal size sheet. That is the general fund debt service. This shows the amount of money being used for debt service on both GO bonds and appropriation bonds and other capital projects. You'll see the house totals on the far right-hand box. Just a note on line 16 is the general fund cash for the Lewis and Clark project. And you'll notice on line 22, no change in the general obligation debt service. And that's because that debt service number is based assuming that MMB has assuming a $800 million bill. And since this is at that and just below, there's no change there. And then I will just note on the bottom of that spreadsheet, the trunk highway estimated debt service and cash spending related to the trunk highway projects.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. At this time, for the sake of the tape, I need to make sure that I note that we do have a quorum, which is, I guess, obvious to everyone that's here, of members. Now, we do have a set of minutes to approve. If I can find them. Thank you. Minutes of the meeting of April 26th. Representative Guineas, would you care to move approval of the minutes? Representative Guineas moves. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And opposed by the same sign. The minutes of April 26th are approved. With that, members, I would take questions from members. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one question that I would have is in regard to the Lewis and Clark funding the $11.5 million. My understanding is we've already funded this project through the jobs bill that's passed the floor. So does that mean that it's double funded, or does that mean that the $11.5 in the jobs bill is now an area that can be used for other programs or other funding or other initiatives that are out there?
Thank you, Representative Dean. This comes as a request of the Chair of Ways and Means that we include this in the bill. It is cash, and I believe that it will be dropped from the jobs bill, but I can't tell you exactly how he intends to do that, whether how that fits into a target that he may or may not have at this time.
Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Are we having testimony, or are inviting general comments?
I'd take some questions from members first before we got to public testimony,
right,
and I'm sure there'll be more as we go along.
Mr. Chair, if I could then, just to get your reflection on a number of issues that are either not in the bill or underfunded, traditionally, higher education has been about a third of the bill, and I think that's because we really believe that is, you know, we are training the workforce of the future, and that's where all of the research and development comes out of, and our thriving competitive economy gets a jump start. And in this one, our staff has done some math calculations, and in this case, higher education is 17% of the bill as opposed to a third. And in terms of asset preservation, which we always talk about as being so crucial, Representative Lilly asked about what the overall requests were, and the bill funds 38% of the requested amount for the University of Minnesota asset preservation, 30% of asset preservation for MinSCU. And maybe the first question specific then about that, MinSCU's priority list is not followed in the bill. There's sort of picking and choosing, and I wonder if you could reflect a bit on how you determined which of the MinSCU projects would be funded.
Well, thank you, Representative Hausman. Of course, history of bonding bills, often priority lists are not followed to the letter. We had to make some difficult choices in which particular projects were funded. We made those choices, and you see them before you.
And then, Mr. Chair, in the case of several that aren't there at all, one is Metropolitan Parks, used by millions, literally millions of people every year. And I think there's always at least been a little bit of an attempt to respond to those needs. And so I was surprised that was totally zeroed out, as was affordable housing, both public housing and housing infrastructure bonds. In the case of housing infrastructure bonds, that's where we partner with nonprofits and generate, for every dollar of housing infrastructure bonds, we generate $3 of private funding. And so we solve a big problem in the state that ends up being expensive for us, because some of those people are going to be treated in emergency rooms and other, you know, hospital and healthcare needs. And so in a sense, not funding some of those comes with a dollar amount. I was confused because the Transportation Committee had a strong bipartisan vote. I see Representative Runbeck here. We all voted bipartisanly to extend North Star to St. Cloud, and that particular project somehow has not made it through here. I think perhaps if you had been given a different target, you would also have written a different bill, but I think the disappointments in the bill are huge for us.
Well, thank you, Representative Hausman, for sharing your concerns. As you have noted, requests for bonding were quite high. I believe somewhere around $5.3 billion. So it's not surprising that we have to leave many things out of the bill. We can't fund everything. It's impossible. We have tried to prioritize things in what we think is an appropriate fashion, and that's what you see before you today. And that's the legislature, I guess, for lack of a better term. Anything else, Representative Hausman?
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Two different. One question, one observation. On line 43, you do dam repair and then have a specific list. Is this the order of dams that need to be repaired that was provided by the DNR, or is this a different order?
I believe in this case we have followed the order that DNR presented to us.
Okay, that's good. The second thing is Representative Lilly asked about asset preservation, and we did have a number there. And what the agencies and the universities, et cetera, asked for was $407 million. What this bill provides is just a touch over $100 million. So what we have left is $300 million of requests for asset preservation that was not funded. So what's happening here is because you're not funding it, you are adding debt to the other side of the ledger, and then literally, it seems to me, pretending it's not there. Crumbling infrastructure doesn't stop crumbling because we're pretending it's not there. And so I think we have to recognize that you are carrying in this bill $300 million of debt for the state, of assets that were asset preservation that's not funded. And I think that's part of the bill that needs to be rethought.
Thank you, Representative Guinness, for those remarks. As you probably know, asset preservation, at least in the other bonding bills I reviewed, has never been fully funded. We've done our best to do a significant amount in this bill, and I do appreciate your perspective on this. Representative Guinness.
Well, just looking at the past is probably not the best thing to do because you've told us you're going to do better than we have done in the past. And I actually think it's not better, but worse, because $407 million, you're funding $100 million. So that leaves $300 million, over $300 million, not funded. So that becomes a debt. The state has a debt of $300 million that you are carrying in this bill. And I think that's part of this discussion that we've got to have, particularly in ways and means going forward.
Well, thank you, Representative Guinness. Representative Runbeck is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I am not familiar. Under Department of Agriculture, $35 million for Rural Finance Authority loans. I don't know exactly how that's spent. If you could just enlighten us a bit.
Thank you. I would ask Mr. Lee to please review that particular line item.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, the Rural Finance Authority issues loans that are at, I believe, under market rate from what farmers could get at, on the market. But the mechanism to pay back those loans is completely user finance. So it's what farmers pay back to the Rural Finance Authority. There isn't any general fund money that's being used to for the debt service for that.
I see. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking through the spreadsheet, and I was wondering on some of these. I mean, it looks like we've got some local projects that are in the bill and some others that are not. And I'm looking on page 4 of 6, the transportation projects, and I see some specific projects. And then in the trunk highway system, we've got trunk highway bonds. And I'm wondering what was your criteria on picking projects? Because we seem to have a lot of projects that we heard in committee, and it looks like. So what was the criteria? How did, was it safety, or was it the traffic on them, or something else?
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen. In regard to the trunk highway bonds that are listed in this bill, they are listed here by request of the Transportation Committee. We, you know, have a history of sometimes carrying trunk highway bond projects in this bill and sometimes not. You may remember last year when we passed a bonding bill or a capital investment bill in special session, we also included a very large trunk highway bond project up on the Iron Range to build that new bridge. So these projects have come to us from the Transportation Committee. I know they have other funds available for trunk highway bond projects, so this is not necessarily all of the trunk highway bonds that will be issued, but these projects and the particular projects and the dollar amounts have come to us from the Transportation Committee. Representative Hansen.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, when I look at the highway projects and I look at some of the other projects that are highlighted, it appears that perhaps the merit of the project is based on the district it's in, rather than the quality of the presentation or the need. You know, I read something about
The speaker hoped that this was a bill that everybody could vote for. I don't think he's going to achieve that. I think this is a bill that some people can vote for, and it doesn't meet the needs of the state. I look at the Public Facilities Authority. I think the governor had a request for water infrastructure. This doesn't come close. It's some, but not all. And then we see the individual projects, and the trunk highway bonds are one example where, I see the majority leader has one in there. I think this doesn't quite meet that goal of having something that everybody can vote for.
Thank you for those remarks, Representative Hansen. In regard to particular to PFA, I think if you look back, you would note, and historically, that the amount of PFA money in here is dramatically higher than it's been any time in recent history. While we could not achieve the same level of spending that the governor suggested, you also might remember that the governor's bill was extremely large. Makes it easy to put large numbers in a large bill. That's not the case here. We have a reasonably sized bill, and therefore the numbers also have to reflect that reasonable size. Representative Malie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And as Representative Hausman pointed out, the Minsky priority list wasn't followed, and it sounds like from your comments it said that you had some difficult choices to make, and I'm just kind of wondering what criteria you used to prioritize the Minsky products or what factors were considered in your prioritizing of the products since the Minsky priority list wasn't followed.
There are, of course, a number of criteria involved, mostly dealing with the size of the various projects and the amount of funds we had available to fund projects in that particular area.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering, because I noticed that Bemidji, Rochester, Hibbing, and Winona were prioritized higher but were not funded. And then there's a pretty significant project at St. Cloud State and also a project in Albert Lea that were prioritized lower than the ones that were cut out. So was there a specific need for those two projects that you included in your bill that were prioritized lower than the ones that were removed or not funded, I should say?
As we look through the list, those are the ones that we chose as being our priorities.
Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We were able to get a kind of a side-by-side from our staff, so it's really kind of interesting, and I kind of want to start backing up to the HEPR because I think there's a lot of bipartisan support on taking care of what we have and just starting. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. So you build a building and we need to protect it. It gets a little trickier when you want to build something new, and I get all that, but certainly preserving and keeping the old car running or whatever makes a lot of sense to both sides. And you know, we were all over the state together. We spent a lot of time, and your staff was sick of us probably saying, hey, can we stop at a coffee shop or whatever? And you know, we looked a lot of these folks.
Representative, if I can just interrupt for 1 second. Our staff never got sick of anybody, especially of you. You were very you were attentive. You attended, I think, every tour, and I appreciate your presence. Thank you for your dedication to the committee.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. I asked to be on this committee, and I thought it was a great opportunity to see the state and look a lot of these folks in the eyes, though, too, and I know you did as well, to see them. So I realize it's hard when you get to that big number and you got to make some cuts. I just, you know, some of it, it seemed like when we're on the, as a team, you know, you get to be, probably become a team, and a little bit of friendship develops as you're traveling around. But it just seemed like some of them made a lot of common sense, like St. Peter, for example. I think it just seemed like everybody kind of responded collectively to St. Peter. People responded kind of collectively to Dorothy Day or Como or certainly Fort Snelling. And I just a quick run through, I didn't see any of those. And I know your job's tough. I know it's tough, but it just kind of shocks me that some of those aren't, that they're not in there. Kind of a bipartisan bill always has kind of been the safe routes to schools. And I know the Senate and the governor, I think, have some money in there. And I hope that you would consider, if this bill comes back, to maybe include some money for that. The trail section, I know what that Representative Hausman mentioned about the metro, but when I look, I'm kind of a trails guy, no big secret there, but I looked a lot of the trails around the state even. It just surprises me. I think they're all pretty zeroed out. And, those are really, I think pretty vital for our development as a state. It's a part of the quality of life. And people aren't going to be screaming about it necessarily here as spending money on them, but a lot of our local people were. And I look at the one in Detroit Lakes, that Heartland Trail, and there's a lot of great business things going on out there too. So bipartisanly, I think that's something that would appeal to both sides of the aisle, with the chamber components, all the folks that came out and presented and said how people are coming and doing tourism. So I was a little surprised to see some of those things kind of zeroed out. So I hope if the bill comes back that you consider, many of these things that I've mentioned. And I know your job's tough, but it's, and you looked them in the face like I did. And, some of them are a little easier to say. No, I'm not going to name names. But, when you're on the bus, you kind of go, that one's going to be a little tough. Maybe one of my projects is tough, I think, with your caucus. But, they're all important to the people, but I hope that you bring some of these back, because there's certainly, like, that Heartland Trail and Safe Routes to School and Fort Snelling, maybe don't have a voice, but they're pretty important projects. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lilly, for those remarks. It's a tough job, but I do have a question for you. You mentioned St. Peter. What exactly in St. Peter did you have in mind? Because we do have a large funding for the St. Peter State Hospital is part of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I thought I noticed a phase two that was not funded. Is that not?
We are slightly under the request for phase two, but we're funding most of it. In discussions with with St. Peter and looking at the spreadsheet for the various projects that were included there, we determined that it was feasible to actually kind of create a phase three. Actually, part of that project could be delayed, and so we did decrease the expenditure from their request by some, I think, approximately $12 million.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I hope you do the same with the other ones then too. No, thank you. Sorry about that.
Representative
Euclid. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is definitely one of the most difficult bills, obviously, because everybody would like to see their projects in this bill. I think it's important to know that the chair and this committee have worked very hard on this, and we went from $600 million to $800 million in projects. There is some wonderful projects in here, and there's a commitment to the U and Minsky, flood hazard mitigation, which is very important for our state. Pollution control gets a lot of money on this bill, and one thing I know, the St. Louis River, $12 million in this for cleaning up the St. Louis River, which we all on both sides of the aisle have looked at for years, and we've known that this needed to be done, and we're making a commitment to it. A lot of money in here for natural resource asset preservation, which is very important, I think, to everybody. Trail development, roads, the Minnesota Zoo, which always gets a little money from us, but any of us that have gone there recognize that this is an important asset for the state. I particularly enjoy watching all the school kids go to the Minnesota Zoo and the Science Museum, which is in big trouble with their building. And we've made a big commitment to them, too. And they've stepped up to the plate with fundraising and a good share of the cost there. But this bill is a little something for everybody, I think. It may be just a starting point. It may change a little bit, but there's a lot in here for everybody else. And just regarding the idea of you know, maybe the U didn't get as much money as they should have or whatever. We do have some other pressing issues that have come up, like flood mitigation, and also some of the water treatment things and things like that. So, Mr. Chair, I think you've done a very good job with a very difficult difficult project here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Lilly's question about the Phase 2. And just at least to, I don't know if they're testifying today, but there are a number of problems in scaling it back. One is the additional cost if it's deferred to 2018. But then because we don't fully fund the Forensic Transitions Unit, there's an operating cost there that patients at the lower campus need transportation to the upper campus for all of their therapeutic activities. And with that split from the upper and lower campus, they have less accessibility to treatment staff. But I think the most alarming is as MSOP clients have begun to be transferred outside the secure perimeter on the lower campus, it still puts them in close proximity now to patients from the security hospital. So we have adults categorized as vulnerable adults are now in close proximity because we've delayed this to those who are civilly committed but outside the perimeter. So, you know, there are a number of risks associated with the scaling back that they'll be feeling.
Well, thank you, Representative Hausman. I would just point out that we have not, this bill does not create those risks. Those risks are there today. They will continue for a longer period of time as a result of this delay, but those risks are present on that, at that facility today. Representative Wiggins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Oglem's saying that we got a little something for asset preservation, and I think little something is the operative word. Because you mentioned specifically that DNR was getting money and the Minnesota Zoo was getting money for asset preservation. But look at what they asked for and what they need compared to what they get. So DNR asked for $80 million and they got 12. And the Minnesota Zoo asked for 11.5 and they got 4. So you're right, it's a little something, but we are creating debt when we don't take care of what we have. And we actually have the numbers now that we're creating debt of $300 million. That is not good news for Minnesotans.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I feel that Chair Torkelson has done an excellent job in putting this bill together. As you mentioned, we have a $5.3 billion tab in requests. And as has always been the case in bonding bills, I think probably since the first one ever done, the requests greatly exceed what money is available. And we have to scale back while still trying to meet current needs and to be balanced across the state of Minnesota. And I think that this is been done very well in that regard. We, even if in a perfect world, if we really believe this, that we could do a $3.5 billion bonding bill and not reach our capacity, we still would be almost $2 billion short of the requests. And I think this is a very reasonable bill. I certainly enjoyed the time we're able to spend touring the state, and the back of the bus is a very fine place to be with Representative Lilly and Representative Dean. I wonder a little bit about, well, I like the Red Lake provision in here. I think that's very important, fully funded for the very great need for a school on Red Lake. I see that Eastman Hall at St. Cloud State is going to be renovated. I have fond memories of the basketball game I played there, but it'll, you know, we just have to move on from that moment and the court will be gone. But again, thank you, Representative Torkelson, for your bill.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. At this time,
is
I
Litchfield
think
in there? 3 million.
Do we have to relive that game again? For those of you in the audience, Representative Erdahl made some fantastic shot and scored a huge number of points at that facility, and he would like it to live in infamy, but the college needs to remodel it. So, sorry about that, Representative Erdahl.
Yeah, a plaque or something.
A plaque or something, yes. With that, I think we'll move on to public testimony. Members, if you have other remarks you would like to make, I will try to fit those in. I have a few people on the list. I have no particular order, but I'm going to start today with Daniel Dunnan from Homes for All. Dannon, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm not going to start with Dan. Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't know you weren't in the room. I apologize for that. After Danielle is done, I will call up Todd Kemmery and David Fenley next. Welcome to the testifiers table at Capital Investment. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you. My name is Darielle Dannon, and I'm the Public Policy Director at the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers. I'm also the co-chair of Homes for All, and I know Homes for All is presented to this group. It's a coalition of over 140 organizations from across the state who are united in ensuring that we have housing for everyone. And I'm here today because we're very disappointed. Housing, as you, I assume, realize now, is not included in the House's bonding bill. And I think we think that's a real mistake. More than 7,500 Minnesotans were homeless this year. We know that nearly half of the Minnesotans who are homeless are children and youth. We also know that the fastest growing number of homeless people are age 55 and older. So it's our most vulnerable people who are those who don't have a home right now. We also know that over 11,600 public school students were identified as homeless this year. The Senate and the governor included $90 million in their bonding bills for housing because it is such an important priority for our state. We know that for every dollar that the state spends on housing, we leverage $3 in private capital. And for every dollar in state funding for preservation, we sustain $4 in federal housing assistance. So those are all things that are not going to happen because this bill doesn't include bonds for housing. And I assume that there are no questions, but I'd be happy to answer any.
Thank you, Darielle. Any questions from members? Thank you for coming before the committee. I appreciate it. Next, we'll have, where was I? I'm sorry. Todd Kemmery and David Fenley. And after that, I'll have Scott Hutchinson from the City of Moorhead. Thank you for coming to the Capital Investment Committee. Please identify yourselves for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
I'm David Bentley from the Minnesota State Council on Disability. Good morning, everybody.
And I'm Todd Kemmery with the Paralyzed Veterans of America. I'm the current chapter vice president. I'm also an advocacy director and an ADA coordinator for our service organization. And thank you for allowing our time here.
Chair and committee members, I'm gonna let him do most of the talking since he can explain this better than I ever would be able to, but we're actually not here about funding. We're here about some language that was taken out of the bill that regards a paved trail for the Minnesota Valley Trail. We are in huge support of having a dual trail there. That includes both a hard surface for people with disabilities and the general public, parents with strollers, bikers. It's a fact that paved trails bring more people out to our parks. So what we want to see is a trail that's paved and also a trail that has a natural surface for bikers as well. But that being said, Todd?
Thank you. I know this subject has come up before in committees before today, and there are a lot of graphs and charts and figures, and I'm not really that skilled at being able to, and I don't have any graphs or charts today. But what I'd like to do is to be able to impress upon you, from my perspective, as a wheelchair user, how important it is that we continue to the state of Minnesota's desire to have this greenway system that is currently. Now, it's not all going to happen at the same time, but what we don't want to have is exclusionary parts of this trail, and specifically the Bloomington Trail. We would like to be able to share that area. Currently, what's being proposed is a dual trail. It is a dual separate trail. You know, I might digress a little bit here. As a veteran service organization that deals with, we handle disabled veterans, we're in a unique position that some of the efforts that we put here today and in future endeavors for initiatives also benefit the disability community on the whole. And I'm happy to do that. So part of what I have to say today is referencing not just as a disabled veteran, but as a disabled person. And hopefully I'll be articulate enough to express the disability community as a whole. What I'd like to do is to just point out just something briefly. It's very personal to me. This is my 34th year in a wheelchair. The ADA has been around for 26 years. And I remember those days before ADA. When ADA became law, and the focus on that was on primarily things like door handles as opposed to doorknobs, curb cuts, the ability to get into a bathroom. And now, because of those efforts from people that were in the past, we are now graduated onto, if I can use that word, to something more quality of life issues. Parks and trails, fishing piers that are accessible, playgrounds for children that have accessibility. We're beginning to see the benefits of a society as a whole to be able to be inclusive for a lot. And that's what this dual trail is Bloomington's desire to be able to have a dual trail system, and I might remind the concept here, it is a dual trail. For those people that want to have that dirt bike and off-road experience, they can have that. And then in addition, the paved or hardened trail will be something that is inclusive to all people, not just because of mobility issues, but we have families, diversity issues that people feel safe about on those paved trails. So I'll conclude with this. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to this, but I would like to be able to remind the committee members here it is important to keep the dual trail concept whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kemmery. Thank you, Mr. Fenley.
Can I?
Question from Representative McGinnis.
Not so much a question, but a comment. I very much appreciate your coming here and explaining that what Bloomington wants is essentially two trails, and because I am still getting letters from people who think there is just going to be one trail and that the dirt trail will be paved over, and they are misleading or have been misled. So I just thank you for coming and telling folks what's really out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McGinnis. I would just like to remind members that the change in language that's incorporated in this bill really leaves it up to Bloomington and the folks down there what to do with this trail. We're removing the requirement for paving, but we are not removing the opportunity for paving that trail. If they decide in that community that that's what they want, that's what they can do. So we aren't restricting them in any fashion, and I encourage you to continue your advocacy. You're doing a great job, and thank you for coming to committee. Next up, we'll have Scott Hutchinson, followed by Keith Carlson.
Thank you for coming to the Capital Investment Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott Hutchins, City of Moorhead. Many of you, this is to discuss briefly with you the need for the 2021st Street grade separation in the City of Moorhead. Many of you have had the opportunity to visit Moorhead and view the area in question. I've had the opportunity, I appreciate the opportunity to have testified before the committee in the past. I'll just highlight a couple of points. Moorhead has attempted on four occasions to receive federal funding for this project and has not been successful. We presently have five active rail lines with over 100 trains per day carrying Bakken crude and other hazardous materials coming through our downtown and through the community. Our fire chief has noted, and Fire Chief Dyson was before the committee with me here a while back, that this underpass would be the only really all-weather, all-floodproof, all-purpose underpass that the city would have if it were constructed going between our main fire station on the north side of the community and to the south. It is a very complex project, and we've noted some of the factors of that complexity. This is a project of multiple arterial roadways, multiple railroad bridges, and it's that complexity that drives the project cost. And you've had the opportunity, I believe, to see the video that shows several renditions and perspectives on the project, and it is very, very significant. And it's because of that significance that it is so necessary, we believe, for the state to assist the city in financing this project. Just recently, Burlington Northern Railroad expressed its continuing interest in this project as a partner in this project by increasing its level of assistance, and I believe there's language in the transportation bill related to some increased level of assistance from the railroad to help realize this project. So once again, we would respectfully suggest that the need is very clear. We have certain characteristics in the community that make this project an absolute requirement for us, and we would ask that to the extent that grade separations have been financed last year and some are to be financed this year, we would respectfully request that Moorhead's 2021st Street grade separation also be included in the bonding bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Hutchins. Representative Hausman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just and maybe, I don't know, fiscal staff, but since we're on this subject of the rail crossings, we thought that the amount for the city of Red Wing is far higher than we understood was needed. Is that an error on the sheet, just since we're on the subject of this particular part of the bill?
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Mr. Lee is paging through his rather large book of projects, and he will enlighten us as soon as he finds the right page. Yeah, in the meantime, I think I'm going to move on, and when Mr. Lee finds that, we'll go back to that information. Thank you for coming to the committee today. Next up, I have Keith Carlson. I'll follow him with Mary Tingerthal. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 regional center greater Minnesota counties and four counties here in the metropolitan area in the suburban ring. First, I want to thank the chair and the committee for the inclusion of the number of transportation programs in this bill. With hopefully the enactment of a transportation funding proposal, a long-term dedicated funding in the other conference committee, this will go a long way towards meeting the state's transportation needs. I do, however, want to bring one issue to the committee's attention, and that's the funding of what's called the Local Road Wetland Replacement Program. Basically, since nearly the inception of the Wetlands Conservation Act, because that had inordinate impact on the construction of local roads, the state has taken on the obligation to pay for the cost of wetland replacement for local road improvements, such as turn lanes, safety improvements, realignments. The local governments continue to pay 100% of the tab when they're actually building new roads or adding lanes or additional capacity to the roads. The state's really been struggling to meet its obligation under this program. It's been underfunded, frankly, for years. The bonding bill is the only source of funding for this program. $5 million that Governor Dayton requested for this program is just basically enough to get the program through the 2016 construction season. If that obligation is not met, and the current amount set aside in the bill is $4 million short of meeting that obligation, it's estimated 47 projects will go unfunded. Local governments have not budgeted contingency funds. They expect the state to meet their obligations, so they will be left in the situation where they may well not go forward with those projects, and those construction jobs, the impact on the local economy will not occur. Consequently, because of the large number of projects that will be affected, many, frankly, most that will be in greater Minnesota, I respectfully request that the local road improvement program be decreased by $4 million and that $4 million be added to the bill's current $1 million. Far more projects will be affected by the absence of funding for the local road improvement program than that reduction in the local road improvement program. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, can I just mention, I have emailed all the members with the details on this.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. I don't see any questions. Thank you for the presentation. Next up, Mary Tingerthal, followed by Don Arnosti.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mary Tingerthal. I'm commissioner at the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. And we appreciate that you are taking testimony on the bill that was posted last evening. We are very disappointed to see that there are $0 for housing in the bonding bill. We hope in my comments to you today that you will understand the impact of leaving it out entirely. I heard comments earlier from members of the committee about at least making a little bit available for important preservation projects, and I think by including this item at zero, it overlooks a very important asset preservation activity that we brought before you with this proposal. It also leaves out the opportunity to, frankly, begin to solve some of the other problems that this committee faces, and that is finding places for individuals who may currently be at some of the regional treatment centers that once they have recovered are looking for housing in the community. We have, in the past with these dollars, provided financing for permanent supportive housing, including projects in places like Owatonna and Winona that are for people who have previously suffered from mental illness and are now finding a very productive life in the community. The request that was placed before the committee of $70 million in housing infrastructure bonds and $20 million in general obligation bonds, none of which were included in this draft, would lead to, we project, leaving behind 50 projects coming from local communities that were anticipating the use of these dollars, leading to either the preservation or construction of over 3,500 units of housing for some of our lowest income households in the state. What it also leaves behind, and I want you to understand this, is roughly $125 million in private or federal investment that will simply be left on the table, will not be made if these dollars are not available. And I do want to emphasize again that there are over 600,000 families in Minnesota today who pay more than 30% of their income for housing, and over 10,000 households that are homeless. That includes veterans, and in the past, these dollars have been used to provide housing for veterans, both in the city of St. Cloud and near the Veterans Hospital in Minneapolis. So again, I ask your careful consideration as you look at what might have been left behind in putting together this draft, just the critical importance of a stable home for our lowest income citizens to be able to begin to stabilize their lives. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. I believe we have a question from Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Dingerthal. Just to bring it to specific projects, so like in South St. Paul, we have the older high-rises. What does this mean without having, when there's no financing, what does that mean for the local community for asset preservation in older housing such as that?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the general obligation portion of this, as well as much of the housing infrastructure bonds, are being used to renovate properties that have been serving our communities in many cases for 40 years. And these are properties that have been well cared for, but simply over time, they need improvements like new elevators or a new roof, improvements that are simply beyond the reach of the reserves that are built up in these properties. And so oftentimes we're looking at deterioration of properties that could end up a year or two from now being even more costly because of damage that's being incurred because the improvements are not being made.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I thought earlier, you know, there's nothing more basic than water, but having a roof over your head is pretty basic too. Zero is quite stunning.
I do not see any more questions at this time. Thank you for coming to the committee, and thank you for your presentation.
Next up,
Don Arnastia, followed by Joe Kelly. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Arnastia. I represent the Isaac Walton League here in Minnesota. I want to thank you for the difficult work you're doing. Just listening to this conversation, obviously there's a lot of needs, but I'd like to highlight actually two things for you right now. The Isaac Walton League would like to underscore the statement that was made previously by Mr. Carlson about the importance of the local government roads wetland replacement program. This is a policy that's been in place for over 20 years that has been successful. And you haven't heard a lot about it from your highway engineers because the state, more than 20 years ago, made the commitment to if the local projects would avoid and minimize wetland impacts and then report them to the state would take on the burden of wetland replacement. This has been very successful, and I'd like to point out, as there's a renewed focus in transportation funding and maintenance, the need for this program actually increases. So it should be considered actually as a component of or linked to a lot of the transportation discussions that are there. This is something that works in government. It's been working for decades. So please fund it so that it can continue to work. What I actually came here to testify about is a very popular program that many people are familiar with. It's called RIM, Reinvest in Minnesota. It has to do with private land conservation actions with willing landowners. There's a partnership that distributed a letter to the committee recently. More than 70 organizations signed on from across the state urging full funding of the original request that the governor put in for $30 million. What this money does is buy permanent easements on rural lands that in the case of the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, which is being a partnership being negotiated right now with the government, with the federal government, would bring at least 2-to-1 match to that money. So I thank you for the $6 million you scraped up to put into this program, but by leaving $24 million of unmet needs, that's actually $48 million worth of federal funds that are not being brought to this state. Now, why is that important? This particular program has been targeted at lands that particularly contribute to pollution or cleaning up our water, and so the lands that would be enrolled in the program would be those that would return a lot of clean water benefits. The second reason why it's important is during this window in the next 2 years, before buffers are legally required in this state, landowners can choose to enroll in the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program to receive a payment for the buffer that they would put in place if they choose to do that on agricultural land. Once the laws, once the deadlines go into effect, they will no longer be eligible to receive
payment. Excuse me, Mr. Arnasti, I don't believe that is true necessarily. I realize there is some language that's being interpreted that way, but we have requested clarification of that, and that the elimination from future enrollment and re-enrollment in those programs should not be interfered with by the buffer program. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
okay.
I don't want to have any misinformation.
Mr. Chairman, you're a farmer and looking into this. I'll accede to that, but that's our understanding of the program. Regardless, the importance of getting funding in this program and the $48 million in federal match money is something that we hope you'll be able to raise the figure on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Arnasti, you referenced kind of a 2-to-1 match. And Mr. Chair, I think we've been hearing it may be closer to 3-to-1. So I don't know if Bowser's in the room, but maybe could get to the committee or by the time the floor, what the exact match would be for federal dollars, because it seems like a lot of money to leave on the table.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Next up, I have Joe Kelly, followed by the Department of Corrections. Mr. Kelly, welcome to the Capital Investment Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Joe Kelly. I am the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to start briefly by thanking you for including the Camp Ripley oil train derailment project in your bill. And I respectfully encourage the committee to consider including the new State Emergency Operations Center project in this bill as well. As members will recall, this project was included in the governor's bonding recommendation and is the top priority of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety. The project was introduced as House File 2913 by Representative Yaruso and a number of other co-authors, and we're grateful for that as well as for the hearings that we had before various House committees. As I testified in those meetings, the current facility that we have has significant shortcomings when it comes to our ability to be there in a dependable way when our communities in Minnesota experience a disaster and emergency. We talked about how I think we all consider it to be unacceptable if when a community experiences an emergency and they need the assistance of state government that we're not there to answer the call and assist them. And as members know, disasters and emergencies happen often in Minnesota, with more than 19 major presidential disaster declarations in the last 10 years. We've had 7 state disaster declarations since passed our state program 2 years ago. As members know, this is not a new issue. The legislature previously appropriated money with which we completed the pre-design work for a new state emergency operations center. We've also completed the study that was required by the legislature to confirm the location as Arden Hills. And we're now ready to move forward with the design and construction of a new dependable state emergency operations center. The building site is on federal land that will be transferred to the state of Minnesota at no cost. We are grateful for the broad support that this project has across the state, including the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Association of Minnesota Emergency Managers, and members of the Minnesota Fire Advisory Committee, which includes state fire chiefs and the Minnesota State Fire Departments Association, as well as the Minnesota Association of Fire Marshals. So, Mr. Chair and members, thank you again for being able to talk on this very important public safety project.
Thank you, Mr. Kelly. I do not see any member questions for you. Thanks for coming to the committee. I'm going to change the schedule a little bit and bring up Commissioner Masman next instead of the Department of Corrections. Commissioner Masman has another meeting shortly, and I don't want him to lose his opportunity to present to the committee. So Commissioner Masman will be next, and followed then by the Department of Corrections.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I appreciate your accommodating my schedule. I'm going to talk primarily about some of the Department of Administration's requests, and I do appreciate, Mr. Chairman, that this bill, as always, is a challenging bill to put together. Obviously, there's always a great many requests, but one of the things that I wanted to just kind of talk about in terms of context is I think it's important to note for Minnesotans and for others listening that the recommendations that the governor and lieutenant governor brought forward and that the agencies brought forward were not extravagant to begin with. So, you know, they're very real, genuine needs, and I think that what we have before us today is a reflection that we eventually need a larger bonding bill in order to make sure we're moving forward with the needs of the state. We have, as I have testified before, and it's been alluded to in various ways this morning, we have a $1.3 billion deficit in deferred maintenance, amount of deferred maintenance in state government owned property alone. So that does not include the University of Minnesota, it does not include MNSCU, and it certainly doesn't include local units of government, in which case the governor, as you know, has made a significant recommendations in the area of water infrastructure, in particular in the state of Minnesota. So the requests you had before you for asset preservation from agencies, as well as recommendations from the Department of Administration to do work on state buildings and state assets, are not a high-end request, but really a request where we're just struggling to keep pace with the needs of maintaining what really is an overarching principle, I think, of the recommendations of being prudent managers of the state's budget, the state's assets and resources. So specific to the Department of Administration's requests, I appreciate the $7 million you did put in for the Centennial parking ramp, but I think that is kind of a poster example of where more resources are needed, because the request obviously to do the full amount of restoration and work on that project, and granted it's a parking ramp, but is $10.8 million. And granted it's a parking ramp, but it's also a parking ramp that as we sit here today is being sustained with posts all throughout the lower level in order to secure the second level from the bottom and make it ensure its safety to be used, with a half of one level out of commission for use in parking. So if you were to see a visual image of that, it looks like someone's basement where you had to rent a bunch of steel beams in order to sustain the facility for a temporary period of time until you were able to do the significant restorations. And obviously that's not the condition that we would want or expect to have the state, the public's assets maintained in. So these are very reasonable requests. The governor has recommended a bonding bill of $1.4 billion, and I would certainly encourage you to fully fund the Department of Administration's requests and the request for the Centennial parking ramp, as well as other asset preservation needs. A related one addition is I note that there is no resources recommended at this time in the bill, either from a cash perspective or a general obligation bonding perspective, for doing physical security upgrades to buildings in the Capitol complex. Those were $26.2 million worth of recommendations made by the Bipartisan Advisory Committee on Capitol Complex Security. We all know that physical security of public buildings is an important thing for us to be paying attention to, as well as, frankly, cybersecurity of our assets, also our data assets. And so I would encourage, as the bill moves forward and the committee moves forward and considers final bonding bill, that you include those recommendations of the governor and lieutenant governor and that bipartisan group as well. And then finally, Mr. Chairman and members, I would call out that
We also would request funding of the agency reallocation general fund money, which I think is just a small amount of money, $1.5 million, but very essential to helping us make sure that we can fully utilize the state-owned assets and move state agencies, boards, and commissions out of leased space and into owned space whenever possible, and so that we're fully utilizing those spaces. I do thank you, Mr. Chairman, for including the funding for the capital monuments and memorials, as well as the CAPRA funding, which is very, very important and needed. We've been seeing increases in the demand on that, particularly with asset preservation and deferred maintenance lagging in the state. We have more emergency needs, and so that fund has had more call on it. So I greatly appreciate your recommendation for $2.5 million in that. And I'm happy to take any questions. And again, I appreciate your making the time, and I look forward to continuing to work with you as the bill is put forward.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner. I do not see any member questions for you today. I will let you be on your way. I know you have another meeting coming up, but we will continue our conversations.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next, we have the Department of Corrections, followed by Deed after the Department of Corrections. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your remarks.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Terry Carlson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Facilities Division. And
my name is Bill Montgomery. I'm the Capital Resource Administrator for the Department of Corrections.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. I appreciate all the dialogue that was had about asset preservation, and also appreciate following Commissioner Mossman and his comments about the importance of asset preservation for our state facilities. The Department of Corrections request for asset preservation was $20 million, and we're funded in this bill at $8 million. Just to refresh memory for folks, our square footage of our buildings is about 6 million, and we have 11 sites for facilities, and many of these sites are old and in rough shape. We have facilities that are over 125 years old at Red Wing, and at our St. Cloud facility, Stillwater is over 100 years old. And so there's always a need for asset preservation money. Our request at $20 million is a conservative request, a modest request for all of the needs that we have about through our facilities condition use audit information. We have deferred maintenance iceberg of about $500 million,
$250 million of which is critical.
So a very big need, and we just ask for full funding for our asset preservation dollars. We appreciate the bill includes full funding for our St. Cloud Phase 2 project. That's a very critical safety and security project, and thank you so much for including that. The next three projects that are missing from your bill add some very critical beds to our agency. Our Willow River Challenge Incarceration Program, the cost of that project is $1.5 million and would add 45 more challenge incarceration beds, which, as many of you know, is an early release program that reduces recidivism. We also have a $2 million request for TOGO, which is also a challenge incarceration program for adult men. That would add 30 beds to that facility. Then our Lino Lakes expansion is for 60 beds at a cost of $5 million. All of these projects are part of our strategy to address our ever-growing prison population and our ability to manage and program the offenders who come to us in a safe, secure, and cost-efficient way. We appreciate the funding for the Moose Lake Control Center. The other thing that was on the governor's request was repair for the St. Cloud granite wall, the mortar. So I, again, appreciate our time today. The Department of Corrections has a critical public safety mission, and we appreciate that you recognize that and ask that you consider as you go into negotiations about this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I do not see any questions at this time. Next, we have Department of, we have deed. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Kim Babine. I am the Director of Policy at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Mr. Chair, members, I would like to echo the gratitude that you've heard from other testifiers and the opportunity to testify before the committee today. Also like to thank you and the committee for including several of the governor's recommendations for programs at DEED, the Transportation Economic Development Program, the Greater Minnesota Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, and the Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program. Those are important programs for our communities, creating vital and healthy communities. So appreciate those being included in your recommendation or in your bill. Wanted to note one piece that was not included in your bill that the governor recommended. It's number one priority for the bonding recommendations put forward by the governor was for an asset preservation project for our South Minneapolis Workforce Center. Many of DEED's core workforce development services are provided through our network of workforce centers. You all have them in your districts and hopefully are well aware of them. The workforce centers allow DEED to provide job seeker resources across Minnesota. The South Minneapolis Workforce Center alone serves 7,000 individuals a year and is one of DEED's busiest locations. It was built in 1993, but the building now requires significant repairs to address code and safety compliance issues that compromise the safety and comfort of DEED staff and customers. Several of the needs rise to the level of critical deficiencies. By using asset preservation bonding dollars to make these repairs, DEED will ensure that the South Minneapolis Workforce Center remains a vital resource for job seekers in the years ahead. So I would ask for your reconsideration of that proposal and look forward to working with you moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Again, I do not see any questions from members, so that's it. Sue Abderholden, I'm sorry I didn't give you your on-deck warning, but I believe you are the last presenter from the public, and please come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead with your remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we're a statewide organization dedicated to improving the lives of children and adults with mental illnesses and their families. And nearly 100% of our board and staff either live with a mental illness or have a family member. So we have a key interest in especially two items that are in or not in this bill. The first is related to St. Peter. We are glad that there is funding in there to continue with those renovations. It is not a very therapeutic environment. We need to make sure that it is. Making those changes will actually also make it safer, both for the patients there and the staff. My concern in not finishing the project in a more timely way is that it will actually cost, it will require more staff to transport people securely within that campus. And so there is not additional money in the Health and Human Services budget to increase the staffing to allow that to happen. So I just ask that you take that into consideration. The second is the lack of funding in the housing agency. I can tell you that nearly every day our office receives a call from someone looking for affordable housing for themselves or for their family member. You have over half of the people at Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center not needing that level of care, but are waiting for affordable, safe housing in the community. Over and over and over again, you see in the media either the sheriffs or the police complaining about people with mental illnesses ending up in their jail. And often it's because they have insecure housing. And so when you're homeless, you end up becoming, you know, kind of coming to the attention of police in your community, usually for more nuisance crimes. And what often people talk about is, well, what we really need are beds in the hospitals. That's what we're missing in Minnesota. That will fix our mental health system. But I'm here to tell you that you can build another 1,000 hospital beds and you will not solve the problem, because people spend the majority of their lives in the community. And they can't do that living on SSI. They need affordable housing. And what we really need are beds in homes, beds in apartments that will keep people safe. So I ask that you really think about this in terms of the affordable housing issue, that when we look to build our mental health system and continue on that that road, that we need to include affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. I do not see any questions from members. I believe we have depleted our list of potential testifiers. I do not see anyone else coming forward, so thanks to the public for their input on this bill. Any other remarks from members before I make some final remarks? Representative Hausman.
I would request a roll call, please.
Roll call has been requested on the motion. Seeing no other comments from members, I would just like to make a few comments myself. I'm sure after today's presentation, everyone understands just how tremendously challenging it is to assemble a bonding bill that meets as many needs as feasible. Again, remind everyone that requests for bonding far exceed the funds available in any possible bonding bill that we could put together. And part of this, in my mind, reflects that we have kind of been enlarging the pot over time, that we fund some different aspects of need, and then those folks that happen to have an interest in that need think, oh, I have a chance at bonding dollars, so maybe I should submit a project too. And so we continue to grow the pile of projects and grow the scope of the bonding bill. And frankly, that pile and scope are not unlimited. We have to have a reasonable figure of bonding. We can't fund everything. Next to the question of deferred maintenance and asset preservation, every building we build, every bridge we build, every road we build, every trail we build, everything the state owns will eventually require maintenance. We need to do as a state a much better job of recognizing that need, planning ahead for that need, and not expecting that the bonding bill is going to come riding in on a white horse and save all of us from this continued need for maintenance and upkeep of our assets. We should, as legislators, be thinking about that as we promote new projects, new trails, new bridges, whatever they are, and recognize that that need is coming, and not necessarily expect that the bonding bill is the only answer for this need that is there, because it's virtually impossible for us to meet all those needs in the bonding bill itself. A part of that, and just along those lines, we talked about a parking ramp here today, one that happens to be owned by the state. Parking ramps generate income. Wouldn't it be prudent if part of that income was set aside for the future maintenance and or replacement of that particular building? That could be applied in other areas. Finally, as we've been evaluating projects around the state, and I'm going to include the Science Museum, which we happen to be funding the reconstruction of in this bill, we need to assure that when the state of Minnesota builds something, that we build it well, that we build it with the expectation that it's going to last for a long time. It makes more sense to me that we build something that's here to stay and that will benefit our citizens for a long time to come, rather than that we build something at the lowest possible price in a fashion that it may not make it for the expected life of a building. We've seen that. I point out the Science Museum, but I could point out a number of other projects where I'm extremely disappointed that they are in need of such major work in such a short time frame. This is unacceptable. We as a state, again, should be have a mechanism in place that assures that what we invest in is something that's going to last. With that, members, I would move renew my motion that House File 3692 be passed out of committee and on to Ways and Means. Roll call has been requested. Bill as amended. Make sure I get the language right. The House File 3692 as amended be passed out of capital investment onto Ways and Means. We'll take the roll.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Swidzinski?
Yeah.
Hausman?
No.
Albright?
Yes.
Atkins?
No.
Dean?
No.
Hansen?
No.
Howe?
Aye.
Lilly?
No.
Moline?
No.
O'Driscoll?
Aye.
Pulowski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Rarick?
Yes.
Runbeck?
Yes.
Tice?
Aye.
Ugom?
Yes.
Erdahl?
Of course.
Vogel?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
Thank you. The bill as amended is passed at a vote for a vote of 11 to 9. Members, I believe that concludes our business for today. This may be our last meeting. I would like to first thank our very competent staff who has led us through not only the meetings here at the Capitol, but also a series of tours through the summer. Both Gavin and Chelsea have done a great job, and I do appreciate their hard work. Next, I would like to also thank our other staff, nonpartisan staff, who are facing some of their more difficult days in the next few days, frankly, trying to keep up with this bill and its all its complexities. Bonding bills are difficult to assemble, even more difficult to assemble perfectly, and they will come as close to perfection as we can possibly get. I would also like to thank members of the committee for your dedication to the Capital Investment Committee, those of you that attended our variety of tours and meetings. It's a big job, and I thank you for your hard work. And finally, I'd like to thank the public and our other state employees that have interest in this bill, have presented before this committee today and other days, and graciously hosted us at various locations across this great state of Minnesota. We have a great state. It's big. We have a lot of things to take care of, and I appreciate your understanding and support of the work that we do. With that, members, this meeting is adjourned.